Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sandy Barber in a moment. First, our play-by-play call of the day. The Flames last night against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Derek Wills in the shootout.
Hessel comes in wide left, scampers towards the net, shoots, and he's stopped by Elliott! And the sea of red rises at Scotiabank Saddledome! The Flames have made history! They tie the 1978-1979 Atlanta Flames with a 10th straight win!
What's sad about that is I remember the Atlanta Flames when they came in as an expansion team. I remember Jim Craig being their goalie. All right, let's bring in Sandy Barber now, Penn State Athletic Director. And Sandy, it's great to have you with us. Welcome back, and great to have you on the show again.
Steve, great to be with you today on this beautiful day in State College.
It's always a beautiful day in State College.
There is that.
The 20-year master plan, it goes in several stages, and I look at state, to me, yesterday was like stage three. I thought stage one was saying, okay, let's move forward and hire populace. Number two was them doing all the work in conjunction with you to then come up with where you are. And then yesterday was the next step, a reveal. Is that a fair assessment of where this is right now?
I think that's very fair, Steve. And I'm leading the pack on this, that people want this to move really quickly, and they want it tomorrow. And I totally understand that. But this is, this is something that has to be planned out well. It has to be well thought out. We've got to figure out what our financing or our funding plans are. We've got to make sure that when we actually go to design architectural design, that we get this right. And not unlike waiting 18 months for the master plan reveal when we thought it would be 12, 13, 14. It's a couple of months pain or a year pain, or two to get it right, I think, for facilities that are going to serve students and serve our community for 50 years plus. I think that's a small price to pay.
Give me the importance of the order that you started with the five. I'll start with this one. I felt, when I found out about the Center of Excellence, I felt that was a game changer in a lot of ways. What was your opinion of that in terms of what it can mean for student athletes and athletics?
Well, Steve, I think you're right about it being a game changer. I called it the cornerstone yesterday. I think in terms of what we're trying to do from a high performance standpoint, from a sports science standpoint, from a collaboration, communication standpoint, that the Center of Excellence is the hub, and it is a game changer, for our student athletes. So I think it's the cornerstone of the vision for our facilities and for serving student athletes and for providing them conditions for success. But as you've already pointed out, we're looking at this in 5-year increments. This is the first 5 years. All of these projects will depend on funding, our ability to fund them. Some of them will be more heavily have the ability to debt finance more than others. Some of them will have different opportunities from a funding standpoint, whether it be public-private partnership, whether it be ICA capital resources, ICA being Penn State Intercollegiate Athletics, whether it be our capital resources or our ability to debt finance. If you look at those first five, that was definitely putting Beaver Stadium outside the first five because of the complexity, because of the lead-up time. I said it probably a dozen times yesterday. We need to now design it. We need to sequence it in terms of what we can do between seasons, because we have to play football in Beaver Stadium in the fall. And then finally, the funding. Now, every one of these projects has that. Some of them don't have the sequencing issue. Every one of these projects has that, but none of them are as complex as Beaver Stadium. So that goes outside of the first five. And then the first five are what are the most impactful to students, and where are the greatest needs? Jeffrey Field, aquatic, tennis, both of those latter two serve the entire student body. And then Center of Excellence is a cornerstone, and a second indoor facility, which is really badly needed. Huluba, particularly this time of year, and particularly with this kind of weather, is really overrun from a scheduling standpoint.
Yeah, I made the point about that in yesterday's show before you went out and did this. I said, look, you need to take the pressure off of Huluba scheduling-wise. That does that. Also, the tennis center and the natatorium, for whatever reasons... various reasons over the years. Something else came up. Something else went to the front of the line. Always had been bypassed. What was the importance you had for you to say, you'll be bypassed no longer, I want to put you to the front of the line finally?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, number one, Steve, it's my understanding that they actually had gotten right to the right to the gate, and funding had been approved, and they were pretty much ready to go in the fall of 2011 for both of those projects.
Yes,
with student fee commitment, I believe, of $30 million towards both of those projects. That was all on board, and then obviously with the with the Sandusky scandal, everything got put on hold. So there is that issue that we were at the gate five plus years ago. Secondly, the impact on our two intercollegiate athletics programs and the impact on students. Again, those are probably the only two facilities in the entire master plan project that have significant impact on the student body.
Right.
And then their impact on the ability of our two swimming programs and our two tennis programs to be successful. I don't think that can be understated.
What I found interesting in looking at the 20-year master plan was the awareness of parking in this. There's a 500. There'll be 500 spaces below the Center of Excellence, and then there's a parking deck area that you're proposing for west of Beaver Stadium. How much area, through various other either athletic or university projects, have taken away from parking over the years, and what kind of role did that play in your decision to say, look, we're very aware of that element?
Well, I think there are a couple of things, Steve. Number one, this was a comprehensive project with not just input, but we had on our executive committee, we had folks from OPP, Ford Stryker and Mark Bevan, or both fixtures from a capital project standpoint on this campus, and they were helping to lead this effort. So, of course, all of the campus-wide kinds of things, like parking, like traffic, like fitting into the university master plan, making sure that design standards, a lot of what you saw in these buildings with the claddings or facings or facades are part of now the design standards for campus. So obviously all the infrastructure, the two road improvements that we're going to make, which I'm really excited about the buildings, but I'll be honest with you, I'm very excited about those two road improvements. I think Dower and Nittany Lion Way, I think is what we're calling it right now, I think it's going to be a huge improvement. So all of that was taken into consideration from minute one. But the other part of it is, let's say that hadn't been the case, and we'd been doing this, and that intercollegiate athletics had been doing it in a vacuum. Not going to happen, but let's say it did. That's part of taking care of our fans. It's part of the game day experience, whether it be from a tailgating standpoint at football or whether it be just the ease of coming and going and having approximate parking space. So whether it be the two-story by Jeffrey or whether it be the underground parking lot proposed at the Center of Excellence, we wanted to make sure that we were at minimum net neutral in terms of parking spaces for the entire master plan.
Jeffrey Field, the new soccer stadiums that are out there, and Penn State just practiced near where the Galaxy play down at out the whatever they call it now, the Home Depot Center. It's in Carson. They're all now covered seating, reduced capacities, and so forth. What did you feel about the design the Populous came up to give Jeffrey that kind of feel?
I mean, I think it's something that soccer fans are coming to expect. And I think now what you saw in the design was coverage on one side. I think that was kind of taking into consideration what was out there, and yet at the same time wanting to maintain some of the tradition of Jeffrey Field. So, you know, the other thing I would say, Steve, based on your comment there, you know, these aren't what Populous decided was right for Penn State.
Right.
You know, obviously Populous came to us with ideas, and frankly with multiple ideas for each facility. But it started with particularly our coaches, our student athletes, our support staff, others across campus, identifying what the needs were. Our fans identifying what the needs were. It's part of what our survey was around, I believe, Rec Hall, BJC, and Beaver Stadium. So they took that input and then came up with some design concept, of which then we looked at and refined and ultimately came out with these. So Populous was our guide, was our collaborator. but these ideas ultimately are about Penn State students, Penn State fans, Penn State community.
And it fits the Penn State campus. You want it to, you want the athletic facility to be, the facilities to be a part of what the campus is, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked a little bit about an athletic district, if you will. I think we used that phrase yesterday, centralization of services, moving more to the area, you know, around BJC, Beaver Stadium, Lash, Morgan Center. But that doesn't mean that we're trying to separate ourselves from campus. I would never want, you know, intercollegiate athletics at Penn State to be, you know, something about, you know, over there across the road kind of thing, you know, that there's a line of demarcation. It's more about centralization and effective and efficient use for our students, and effective and efficient use for our fans as it relates to infrastructure like parking lots, as you were talking about before. But it absolutely, both from a design standpoint, I talked about some of the design, campus design standards before. From a design standpoint, we want it to fit. We want it to fit campus and look like a part of campus. And then actually, you know, we want it to be a part of campus. We want it to be something that that you walk campus and you walk past the Center of Excellence. You walk past Pagula. You walk over to Beaver Stadium and look through and it becomes a part of the campus overall.
I have not asked you yet about Beaver Stadium. Now that's not in the first 5 years. On this master plan, idealistically, because things will change depending on funding and time and so forth, that has to be, I think, understood. But what are the checklist of priorities that no matter what, you know you have to do with that stadium?
Well, we've talked a lot about the seating and the tread currently being, I think it's 24 inches, and industry standard now is 33. So the seating bowl and the comfort for our fans needs to be addressed. As we did the surveys, certainly there was we got a lot of interest, as you might imagine, in instead of bench seating, a seat with some kind of a chair back, whether it be a bench back or it be an individual chair back. We also got a lot of interest in, and I know this is not necessarily a popular phrase, but in some kind of premium seating, whether it be suite or whether it be loge box or, you know, club area kind of thing. I would say the other certainly, and this, you know, sounds a little funny, but it actually is the reason that it was pretty apparent we needed to look at this fairly early on in my time here. Just basic infrastructure, concessions, concourse areas, and of course restrooms. I think those kinds of things need to be addressed for the comfort and safety of our fans.
Some of the steel in there is also 80 years old. I mean, that's something that, you know, that a lot of people don't realize. Some of that goes back to Old Beaver Field. So, obviously, that's a cost driver in this, too, isn't it?
Absolutely, but I'll also, I will say this, you know, Mark Bodenschatz and Ford Stryker, Marv Bevin, and, you know, from a campus standpoint, have done a great job of, over time, you know, making sure that that kind of, maintenance has been kept up. So, although, you know, if we're gonna go in and do things from a seating standpoint and restrooms and concessions and concourses, that's all gonna be impacted. The actual age of the stadium, if we wanted to live with those kinds of conditions, wouldn't be a problem at this point.
I think it was mentioned yesterday that if things played out the way it played out yesterday, that 103 in that neighborhood might be a number. How did you feel about keeping it potentially over 100 if it all plays out right?
Yeah, that's the number that that we're looking at right now in these conceptual designs. We did talk about, and I said it yesterday, we did talk about and kind of agreed as an executive committee that it was important for us to stay at six figures and to stay at 100,000 or above and figure out how to configure that. You know, that obviously works in juxtaposition to us wanting to do wider treads and maybe doing chair back, seat back, loge boxes, those kinds of things. So we've got to work those in concert with each other and come up with a workable solution.
Finally, I'll save the hardest question for last, and that deals with the Jordan Center. You know, that's not in the first 5 years, obviously. But what are your thoughts on that, at least at this point? Because obviously that's still a wide open question.
Sure. I don't think it's as wide open as people were maybe led to believe or walked away from it yesterday, because we felt it was important, obviously, to concentrate on the first 5 year project, and then Beaver Stadium is where everybody goes. in terms of this conversation, so I knew I would be pelted with something yesterday if we didn't talk about Beaver Stadium.
Right.
But just like these other projects, we have a conceptual design in the master plan for a renovation of the Bryce Jordan Center. Obviously, this is complicated or complex. Made more complex by the fact that Intercollegiate Athletics does not manage the Bryce Jordan Center. It's managed by Auxiliary and Business Services. It is currently used as a multi-use facility for concerts and job fairs and convocation and graduation and so on, as well as men's and women's basketball and at least once a year wrestling. So we've got partners that we're working very closely with, but we all see a need, not only a need for basketball but some other needs, and a reduced seating capacity of some size, I don't think the problem is all that complex. Some of the media yesterday kept asking, well, you know, what are the things you're going to do? Well, we need to make the seating bowl more intimate.
Right. Exactly.
But, you know, yeah. I mean, it really isn't more complicated than that.
Right. And I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah. And so that's in our renovation of the Bryce Jordan Center, that's the plan. Make the seating bowl more intimate. You can see from the drawing that there are also some additions on the concourse level that open some things up that I think are a really nice design, and I'm excited about that one. But you know, a Bryce Jordan Center renovation and a Beaver Stadium renovation are both pretty significant projects, both from a construction, a design and construction undertaking, and also from a funding standpoint. So those are going to take time.
That's why it's a 20-year master plan. Over 20 years, this is going to leave this campus in really great shape. Thank you so much. I mean, that's the whole point. In the end, it's going to leave the campus in great shape. And in the 21st century, it's going to be a place where student athletes will be able to thrive because of what's, you know, because of the facilities.
Absolutely. And that's certainly the vision, and the ultimate goal here is provide our students for conditions for success. And along the way, in those spectator facilities, our fans to have a great experience.
Sandy, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. I appreciate the time you gave us today.
Thanks, Steve. Take care. Be safe.
Sandy Barber, Penn State Athletic Director.
And we'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Well, time now to get to our sports bozo of the day. You know, he's going to end up really rich because of his kids. But now LeVar Ball has told everyone that he wants $1 billion as a brand for a shoe contract. $1 billion. In fact, our crack staff here at Sunbury Broadcasting was able to go inside the negotiating room with LeVar Ball as they worked out the number.
Gentlemen, my name is Dr. Evil. In a little while, you'll notice that the Kreplakistani warhead has gone missing. If you want it back, you're going to have to pay me $1 million. Sorry. $100 billion.
Gentlemen, silence.
Now,
Mr. Evil.
Dr. Evil, I didn't spend 6 years in evil medical school to be called Mr. Thank you very much.
It is the policy of the United Nations not to negotiate with terrorists.
Really? So long.
Mr. President.
So there you go. That was the inside as to how the negotiations took place as Under Armour, Nike, and Adidas sat there and listened to LeVar Ball.
Intense.
What's next?
That's some deal-making action going on there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, I guess he went back for a second one. So when he went back for the second one, this is what happened.
After I destroy Washington, D.C., I will destroy another major city every hour on the hour. That is, unless, of course, you pay me $100 billion.
Dr. Evil, this is 1969. That amount of money doesn't even exist. That's like saying,
I want a gajillion bajillion dollars.
So that was the second conversation he had. But what he wants is $1 billion. By the way, film clip courtesy of Austin Powers.
Groovy.
Groovy, baby. Look, I don't mind him trying to get whatever he can for his family. I've got that. But I think Joan Crawford's getting a little too much publicity here. What do you think? In fact, I want you to tomorrow. We have Doug Birdsong on the show tomorrow. I think we need to book Christina Crawford. Just for... Okay. All right. It's our sports bozo of the day.
Wire hangers. No wire hangers.
Oh, no wire hangers. Oh, my goodness. All right, let's bring in Neil Coolong now. All right, let's bring in Neil Coolong. Neil, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, as always. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start with Lawrence Timmons. I think one of the important things in the NFL is that you have to understand the shelf life of your players. When you watched Timmons play, was there a shelf life that you were starting to look at?
Yeah, and a large part of that is it's been Timmons has been a guy that really I can think he kind of has a special place within the Steelers just because he was Mike Tomlin's first draft pick, and the big thing with him was he was really inexperienced. He didn't play a whole lot at Florida State, but he was just uber athletic, and it really kind of ushered in what he's really looking for on defense. He wanted to bring in very athletic, high-end athletic players, and Timmons was really that for a long time. But toward the end, what you really saw was more of a kind of in the box linebacker, and I would assume that's the way Miami is intending to use him. I think they asked probably more than he was capable of doing in coverage, and I think that hurt him at times. Obviously with the ascension of Ryan Shazier as well, what you could really see a step slower in Timmons than what we're used to seeing. I think they might have been interested in bringing him back at a little bit cheaper of a price, and they ended up getting in Miami. I would imagine they would have said congratulations, best of luck if Timmons came back and said they're giving me $12 million. So with that, it's I think it was probably in the team's best interest to move on. I'm not even sure if Timmons has more than a year left in him anyway, but just for the sake of really having enjoyed watching him play over the last decade, I hope he does really well.
Yeah, no, because he played against Penn State in the Orange Bowl, and you could see, I want to say he was a junior at the time, and he really had great explosiveness, but that's something we haven't seen from him in the last couple of years, because age takes its toll.
Yeah, he also, you got to keep in mind, I think he missed like four snaps in the last 5 years or something like that. He was really their workhorse for a long time. He didn't come off the field every package that they had. I think what they're going to need to do is kind of try to find a way to get Ryan Shazier up to a point where he's able to take that kind of pounding. He takes a couple plays off. He's not the 99% snap kind of guy just yet, but I would imagine their future plans are going to include that. They're going to need that leader on defense. The way Timmons kind of assumed that role when James Ferrier retired. Shazier's the next guy up for that, and you hope he can do well with it. Having been around, I assume he's able to do that. So it'll be definitely a different looking defense in the way that really kind of has been the last couple of years for the team.
All right. The Steelers are never huge active players in free agency. They usually wait a little while. What do you think the wait has yielded?
To this point, I think they were sincerely interested in Devon House, who just he was in Pittsburgh when he got a one-year offer from the Packers, and he decided to accept that. I think there was legitimate interest there. They would have wanted a veteran to provide some depth, and I think he would have been able to do that. He's a solid player. I think he had kind of a down year last year, but the guy a couple of years ago, he got a $25 million contract from the Jaguars. So I don't think his days are numbered. They're not over yet. He's still got some ball in him, and I think the Steelers recognize that. Plus, he really kind of fits the mold of the kind of player the Steelers pursue in free agency. And I don't have the figures in front of me, but I wouldn't be surprised if cornerback is the position that they've addressed the most often within free agency. And a large part of that is they really like the younger, cheaper guys who have experience. I know that sounds cliche, but they really make a point to bring in guys on cheaper deals who have played a lot of snaps up to that point in their career. He might be a little bit on the older side. I think he's going to be 28 this season. But you look back 2 years ago, they signed Bryce McCain for $750,000. He was 25 at the time, and he had 2 years of starting experience. Ended up being, I think, probably the best cornerback the Steelers had that season. So they want to find those kinds of guys, and if they're out there, the market doesn't pick them up right away, they'll kind of swoop in and take a look, and I think that's what they're going to do now.
Jarvis Jones met with the Cardinals yesterday. He's supposed to be meeting with the Rams, I think, today. I would doubt the Steelers really care where he goes.
Yeah, I don't think they're like most of their free agents. They'll let them test the market and kind of see what's out there, and let the market itself dictate what they're going to do. I think they would have some interest in bringing Jones back, but I certainly don't think he's going to get the money he's been getting. He's definitely going to take, you know, at least something of a. Let's put it this way: he's not going to take a big step forward on his last contract. He'll get a veteran price, I would think, for him. If he's not going to get much money up front right away, he's going to want an opportunity to play three downs, and he'll do it on a one-year deal. So if he's going to bet on himself, he's going to take something probably around, you know, $3.5-4 million, I would think, and see where that goes. I don't think the Steelers would want to bring him back at that price. They'd want to get more years out of him if they were going to, and really kind of try to find you know, some depth at the position. They don't have good depth there right now anyway, and I think Jones fits what they might need, but it, clearly they sent him a very strong message down the stretch last year when he didn't play. So I do think they're going to need to bring in somebody if they want to keep James Harrison on a pitch count kind of the way that they did last year, and let him stay as rested and healthy as possible heading into the playoffs when they really need him. I don't think for Jones's sake, I don't think he'd be interested in, you know, playing that kind of a role again. So he's going to look around and try to find the best opportunity that he can. But the key thing for him is going to be playing time. And I don't think he's going to get that in Pittsburgh.
All right. Eddie Lacy ended up signing with the Seattle Seahawks. Different. What did you think about that one?
I thought it was very interesting, just because it's a team that really transitioned away from their power running game, which they did a lot of when Marshawn Lynch was there. They ran with Thomas Rawls and Procyte last year. They ran a lot of inside zone. That really is kind of the trend of the NFL now. You're seeing a lot more of that style across all teams, and a lot less power. I'm not sure that Eddie Lacy's capable of doing much other than power. I see him as a fairly limited back, and that's, you know, just assuming he decides to not play this season at 265 pounds the way he has. He's just way too big. He's way too plodding. He's not fast enough to be a feature guy. So I haven't seen the details on what Seattle gave him, but I can see why they'd want to bring a different style of running back in to go with Rawls and Procyte. He's obviously much bigger. I'm pretty sure he's the biggest running back in the league. But I think he's limited really just to power. So for me, that really kind of tips off a defense. When he's on the field, if they're going to run the ball, that's the way they're going to run it. There's something to be said about, so what? Let's get out and bang heads and see what happens. But I don't really see him as being a huge difference maker. He's definitely more of a name,
right,
than he is a productive player. He hasn't been great since he was a rookie. So really, it's, you know, he's going to sign somewhere. I'm not saying he should be out of the league or anything like that. But you're not looking at Marshawn Lynch, too. You know, I made a joke on Twitter about them going from beast mode to feast mode. A big part of it really just is the fact that he's not going to be the same guy as Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch is, in my opinion, a Hall of Famer. So it's easy to make the comparison.
Is June 1st actually a more important date for Tony Romo than this particular moment? Because I think sometimes the June 1st thing gets lost in the shuffle at this time of the year. Is June 1st a far more important date for him?
You know, that's a really interesting question. We've had a lot of dialogue on that on our Cowboys site. For him, what he said is that if he was going to be a free agent, the implication was out there that he was going to take his time. He was going to select the best team that he could. And I think overall that, you know, the most obvious to me is the Texans. I think that's the best spot for him. Obviously money, you know, comes into it, but if Houston is basically willing and ready to throw away $17 million in trading Brock Osweiler, what they're basically saying is, we know we can get Romo, but the question comes down to whether or not Dallas can get something for a trade. At first, my thought was, if they can't get a trade worked out by the start of free agency, they would cut him for the sake of, he's Tony Romo, he's given us a ton. You know, he's done a lot for this franchise over the last decade. Let's give him the best chance that he can to find success. We'll give him that opportunity. But now you have moves like Houston, and Denver obviously is still interested. I think they're going to kind of stick around and see what happens in terms of you know, maybe the draft. Now you have Chase Daniel available in free agency. There are other quarterbacks who are out there that might entice one of the teams that are looking to add a quarterback. So really, I think it's more of They're going to want to wait and see, because yes, they can wait to make him a post June 1 cut. They don't really need the cap room right now in Dallas. I don't think there's a whole lot of guys they're wanting to go out actively and sign. So they're going to play patiently. I kind of thought they'd go a different route, but it really looks now like, yeah, we can wait. I mean, there's not going to be a whole lot of difference between now and the draft, if you think about it. They can still make a trade then, if that's what they want to do, if they're willing to carry his salary cap number into that point.
Because the Cowboys are in what I refer to as the Russell Wilson spot. Their starting quarterback is there on a fourth-round deal? And they've got him on a fourth-round deal for a couple of more years, which gives them a lot of flexibility at this stage. Is that fair to say about them?
Absolutely. I think that's a great way to put it, too. And Seattle was able to build a championship-level team. Baltimore did the same thing when they had Joe Flacco on a pretty cheap deal.
Yeah, they got Bobby Averill, and then even though in the Super Bowl he was big, but they signed Percy Harvin because they had extra room to do it in Seattle.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd point back to Baltimore in 2012 as well, or whatever year it was they won the Super Bowl. They were able to go out and sign Bryant McKinney. They're able to go out and get like a $4 million fullback. I forget what the guy's name was, but he was an animal. Great players that cost a lot of money because they have that cap space available. Whereas, a team like the Steelers had Roethlisberger on a huge deal. So that eats up a huge amount of their cap space. They're not able to make those kind of, luxury signings. Dallas will be in that position. They have to clear, Romo's numbers off the books. But yeah, they've got Dak Prescott on nothing. In fact, he's not even allowed to get a contract until he enters his fourth season.
Right.
So you look at it like that, they've got a bright future in Dallas. That's going to be a very good team. So for me, I think it probably would just be in their best interest to say, we have a championship caliber team right here. In fact, I think you replay the first half of that game against Green Bay, they're going to win it. They're a better team than Green Bay was. And I think they probably could have beat Atlanta as well. So you put all that together, they know that they have time. Their best days are still ahead of them. They don't need to make other moves in free agency. So they can kind of wait and see what they might be able to get for Romo. Imagine a team like that getting another second or third round pick. That's a great deal for them.
Neil, always a pleasure. Appreciate it very much.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong joining us, USA Today. We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Attention, Central Pennsylvania truck buyers. This is the sales event you've been waiting for. Sunbury Motors' annual March New Truck Sale. SMC is the only Ford dealer in the area that has four city blocks of new Fords and has sold over 40,000 new trucks. Right now, pick from over 125 new Ford trucks with savings up to $12,500. Sunbury Motors has new 2017 Ford F-150s starting as low as $23,919. There's over 30 2017 Ford Escapes, and they're priced from just $18,880. SMC has 2017 Ford Explorers starting under $30,000. And there's 45 of the all-new 2017 Ford Super Duty.
Motor Trend's Truck of the Year.
Plus, there's 0% financing for up to 72 months on select models. Central PA truck buyers, this is it. SMC's annual March New Truck Sale. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, proudly serving the Susquehanna Valley for over a century.
Lonzo Ball is a fabulous college basketball player. Really good. He makes people around him better. The two kids that are playing high school now, I don't know. I can't tell you anything about them. I've only seen them on tape. But they won a $1 billion deal, and they say they'll take $100 million a year over 10 years to do it. You have to give them credit for the ability to negotiate with the big people.
Here's the plan. We get the warhead, and we hold the world ransom for $1 million.
Well, don't you think we should maybe ask for more than $1 million? $1 million isn't exactly a lot of money these days. Virtucon alone makes over $9 billion a year.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of money. Okay, then. We hold the world ransom for $100 billion.
And the look of the executives from Under Armour, Adidas, and Nike were. They want to have their own brand. It's Triple B. All right, thanks to the good people at Austin Powers for providing us with Dr. Evil today. Look, you have to have some fun with this. Now, something tells me LeVar Ball would not find this segment funny at all. I don't think so. Why do people go to him and ask him questions? I mean, do they really think he's an important interview in life?
I mean, what else is he going to say? How hard is he going to criticize his kids with a microphone in his face? Come on.
Well, he's not going to criticize. No. He's he's saying that his son could be better than Steph Curry. Maybe in the end he is. I don't know.
Yeah.
But guess what? He doesn't know either. Nobody knows.
Let's go through the tournament, see how he does there.
I mean, let's start with that basic one. I mean, Steph Curry took Davidson to the Elite Eight. Davidson, repeating once again, Steph Curry took Davidson to the Elite Eight almost by himself. He wasn't on UCLA at the time. I don't know. I see stuff like this, and we're going to be our own brand, just like Jordan has his own brand. Well, Jordan didn't get his own brand until he established himself as a professional. LeBron's $1 billion deal didn't happen until 2015, after he'd been in the league, 12 years? I mean, who's number three? It's Kevin Durant at $30 million a year. That's kind of a drop, don't you think?
I'm not picky. I'd handle that.
Look, I mean, do I blame them for trying to get as much as they can out of this? But after a while, this is where experience in media comes into play. You have to understand who's significant and who's irrelevant. I put it on today because we made fun of it. Because it's irrelevant. I don't care how much money they get for whatever brand. I can tell you right now, I'm never buying it. So what does it affect me? It has no effect on me at all. I'm not going to buy anything that they have because that's not my style to begin with.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.